Welcome, pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. I'm your host, Ken Seymour, with your most excellent second host, Richard Geiger.
It is wonderful to be talking about a collection of misfits and non-humans doing good for humanity.
That's right. What would you call such a thing? I can't even imagine watching seven episodes of such a thing.
Monster Squad.
Right, exactly. That's how my brain wanted to remember things. In fact, up until the day that this releases, if you were to look on our website, that's what it would say.
It was just like, you know, when people are filming movies, it goes by a code name the whole time.
Yeah, a code name has nothing to do with the rotting mess underneath my cranium. Mm-hmm. But we are talking about Creature Commandos, the newest offering from DC Studios in the new Gunverse. I think that's what I'm going to call it, the Gunverse.
Gunverse is fine.
Yeah. And it's just kind of it's kind of interesting. We're going to talk about seven episodes of an animated series that are half an hour apiece that's going to be part of the overall universe, kind of doing the same thing that the MCU is doing in a blend of movies as well as streamed television services, kind of going in a backwards order, sort of, in a way.
Yeah, and of all the things, this really is what kicks off, in a true sense, the official rebooted universe.
Yeah, and the really fun part of going through this is I know that in the stuff that I'm going to be watching with the new DC universe as led by Mr. Gunn and cohorts, that it won't be dreary and overcast and all unnecessarily serious. And goodbye, Mr. Snyder. I am happy to have moved on.
And I really think that the mood of DC can go well if you're dark and dreary.
Yeah.
If you do it right.
Sure.
You know.
Well, truthfully, that's kind of a little what we're going to talk about here in a minute, but it's not the same thing. So, for those of you out there, this is a brand new show. And for once, we got on this quick. It's not been out a real long time. So, we should probably give a little non-spoiler impression first.
Yeah, I think the final episode was last week.
Yeah.
As we were recording this anyway.
Yeah. So what did you think? Non-spoiler, what are your general impressions? Is this something that people should get on and just absolutely watch immediately? What did you think the overall quality of the show was?
So if you look at the, besides maybe the Blue Beetle movie and the Aquaman movie, honestly, I haven't seen that Aquaman movie. I have no desire to see it. Some of the last DC offerings were by James Gunn. There was the Suicide Squad movie,
mm-hmm.
Which had some elements and some relation to the overall entity of the universe, right? Some similar people, but like a much better spirit to it.
Yeah.
Better story, better construction. Was it the most amazing film? No. But it was very good. It was enjoyable to watch. It was kind of refreshing to see some of the humor injected in it.
It had Starro.
And it exactly. And then honestly, everything else that I watched, DC Starro kept showing up and it was whatever. but then the Peacemaker show came out, right? And
yeah.
The Peacemaker had that same kind of R-rated, bad words, blood and guts, but like goofy, funny.
Right.
Right? So it had a different spirit and a different attitude. And those, if you liked those two shows, you will like this, is kind of how I would relate to it.
That's a good way of putting it, I think. I personally thought that, especially considering the length of the episodes. This is a kind of thing that I get into multiple times when we're talking about things. When we were talking about this with What If, where it's like, you know, it's an hour long, and the episode's like, man, that episode, for what they're trying to do, feels like it needed to be longer to accomplish what it was trying to accomplish, or it just didn't feel complete. They pack a lot into these half an hour episodes, and they feel, if not complete, they feel for sure like it's enough, and it's extremely entertaining.
And for me, because these are released on a week to week basis, so you just have to wait. I watched them on a week to week basis. Your viewing was different from this, so you can kind of just merge them all together. I kind of felt every week, as I sat down in the morning to eat a bowl of cereal and watch the show, that when it was done, I was sad because I wanted more. So that's the attitude I had going into it. I definitely look forward to it each week as they were released.
Yeah, I could definitely see that for sure. Just it was real. I felt at the end of each episode, it's like, yeah, I'm ready for the next one. So just kind of taking all of it in two evenings was fantastic for me. It's like, this is exactly the way it should be watched.
Now I'm going to throw out there too, I'm a bit biased when it comes to animated things as it pertains to, you know, Marvel and DC. I've tried to consume as much of that product as possible on both sides of the divide. And for a good stretch, DC had just amazing continuity of 20 some odd movies that fit well together, that were good stories, that were fun, all in animated 1 hour and 15 minute features. And then they had a reset, and then the last bunch have just been very mediocre. So this was good to see a better set of animated DC character-based shows.
Absolutely. So now we're going to start talking a little more about the show itself. So if you haven't seen it and you are bothered by spoilers, this is the point of no return.
This is it.
So, you know, some of it we're going to be talking about those that are involved, but we're going to be talking about character and development and plot and all that sort of stuff. So ye have been warned. So first of all, the thing that really got me was 7 episodes. That was odd. Well, I mean, literally and figuratively, an odd number of episodes to kind of go with it. When I first looked at it, I was like, that's not enough time to tell any sort of real story. And I was wrong. Man, was I wrong.
Yeah, I think we're all, maybe because of some of the shows that are out for most streaming services, maybe even if you look at Marvel, where they do an 8 or a 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the standard. So 7 just kind of seemed off. Although Marvel had a 6 episode show in there every once in a while too. It just seems that 7, once again, I was sad because I wanted more. But if what we saw in this is just a placeholder, a setup, a development of what is going to happen when the Superman film comes out later this year, this is a good way to get your feet wet in whatever that attitude and atmosphere is actually going to be.
Yeah, it's I think you're right about that. One of the things that really struck me, and you know, it's always been my big sticking point, it's important to have a good plot for the episodes, but it's also character development, character growth is huge for me. And they that's like what the whole episode was. In at least half of these episodes, just history and how the character has changed. It's like, really? That focus blew me away.
Yeah, why are they who and what they are? Why are they in the position that they are?
Right. So, obviously, the Creature Commandos is based on an old DC property or multiple old DC properties from back in, you know, like the 60s. So they were You know, the comic book companies have done monster characters for a long time. And they kind of fell out of favor to a certain extent. After a while, people wanted to look at books with superheroes in it more than the other monsters, but they didn't go away, and they integrated them into the other stories. So sometimes that was, kind of slick. When I got to see them, do things in the news, like, oh, that's kind of sweet. And that's what this feels like for the most part. Like, G.I. Robot came out in 61, 62, something like that. So it was in some of those, we talked about weird science and stuff like that on the Marvel side of things, or on the EC side of things. But this is their, weird war stories and things like that. That character has been around a long time. They've been using Frankenstein, the Bride of Frankenstein, about that long. Did you feel like Frankenstein sounded like David Harbour? Because he didn't. He had a completely different sound for that character, I felt.
You're right. If you watch it and you don't know that it's David Harbour, and you're seeing it sounds the voice acting is great, right?
Yeah,
it's very nice. And if you're watching it and you don't know that it's David Harbour, you won't know that it's David Harbour. And then when you look at the credits and it says David Harbour, you're like, wait a sec, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like that's kind of the you when you're seeing the Dr. Phosphorus character,
right?
If you've watched enough things that are animated, you know it's Alan Tudyk.
Right. There's no mistaking him.
Correct. It's like you know who that is. But David Harbour has done a few things, just not as many as Alan Tudyk.
And if you're a fan of Frank Grillo, I mean, Rick Flagg sounds like Frank Grillo. Now, that's the thing. He's not been in a ton of stuff. So it's just like, all I'm hearing is like, oh, it's Crossbones.
It's Crossbones. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's just so much fun. Of course, Viola Davis is just, she's one of my favorites. She's been great in everything I feel that she's ever touched, and she's got one of those iconic voices. And once they had her do Waller, it's one of those castings that's perfect. There is nobody else that could do it better than her in the role that she's in.
Well, I feel like when you hear, when you see her in live action as that same character, mm-hmm. it just fits. There's a couple characters. I mean, they did it in Spider-Man, right?
Right.
We saw, so you're right. It's that character has been brought to life by some of these animated shows. The Constantine character.
Yeah.
I think is the same way. As they've changed things over time, the fact that it's been the same actor, because he was so good at the role, even through all these, like, we're talking like WB stuff, DC animated, like, it doesn't matter. He's been the same character the whole time. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's the same with her. Like, she's great.
Yeah. I really liked Sean Gunn as G.I. Robot. I think that he really went cheesy with the voice and, are we going to kill Nazis now?
Yes. Yeah. So very good.
That's awesome. Everybody just is right, like really well cast, and everything is good. I kind of had only one thing that made me just a little bit sad, is they had Clayface in it, and I've been spoiled with Harley Quinn. And I really wanted him to sound like Clayface from Harley Quinn. It's like, aw.
But he did do the voice.
Yeah. It just.
But yes, not the Harley Quinn, which, by the way, has a new season that just started. So.
Yes, I can't wait to see that. That's going to be so good. But yeah, so just all in all, the casting is great. The bride as Indira Varma, if you're not really familiar with her, she's been in a lot of stuff. I mean, she's got quite the casting.
Her voice acting credits are substantial, I feel like. But recently she's been in Game of Thrones for a couple seasons.
Right.
She was in Star Wars as was it the Andor series, I think.
We just talked about Vox Machina.
Yeah, we just did a review recently. And there's actually quite a few people that are in this that are in Vox,
yeah.
Actually.
There's an amazing crossover between everything. The writers of the show, I mean, you're talking about, this is the one thing, or the directors, I should say, of the show. This is the one thing that's kind of interesting. They're like art department on other things. If you look at it, they like did The Batman in 2004 and Killing Joke in 2016. And Beware of Batman in 2013. So they've had some animated series history, but this is like a slightly different step out for both of them. It's I saw a major billing for Sam Liu, but also Matt Peters was involved. They both had, you know, a lot of the same projects they worked on previously in the art department and in directing animated series. So a couple of veterans, and it feels like it shows.
Well, okay, so here's the thing. If you look at the Sam Liu character, he did a really large chunk, if I'm not mistaken, of the stuff from the DC animated universe that I was saying was like really good in
right.
those like 20 movies. He was like the glue that kind of made all of those work. He didn't necessarily direct all of them, but if you look at his credits, they are substantial. And the ones in the DC universe over time that he's done have always been a lot of the better projects.
Right. So that was that, having the right people in the casting, having the right people in the directing, and then you've got Gunn writing it. Basically, if this wasn't good, that would have been the surprise. Just looking
yeah,
at what was involved.
You're right, because the individual credits for everything, so we're talking like the voice acting, the directing, the writing, even the art department, like all that stuff is top notch. It's not like they threw some things together or skimped or, you know, like whatever you could say. They really put the effort into this. And if you are a DC fan and you want things to succeed and you're not watching this, you're the problem.
Right.
Right? Like that, it isn't this project.
No.
It's the people consuming the project.
And you know, the funniest thing, looking at it in the episode order that it is, the first episode, The Collywobbles, is maybe the weakest episode of the seven. Only because it's, and some would say maybe the strongest, one of the stronger ones, for the same reason I think it's the weakest one, is it's the movie I've already watched, basically, at least the beginning of the movie. It's like, yeah, let's get everybody together. Waller is finding a reason to use them, to get them onto the mission. They still have the thing in their head. Instead of destroying them, it's just shocking them this time, but it's still the same concept, and everybody is not quite as nice to each other and yada yada. So okay, it's I've seen this. And then Rick Flag is Rick Flag with just the mild nods like, yeah, sorry about your kid.
Exactly. So this is the first thing in this series, but this is a direct follow-up to both the previous Suicide Squad movie and Peacemaker.
Right.
Right. All those components, they existed. Now this exists, even though
it's not technically canon.
Correct. It's not forgotten, but it's this. This is canon, and the story is. It's a weird situation. Whatever it is, this will be the first part of it.
Yeah. And then you get the basic concept that they've got to go protect the princess of another country that's sort of semi-Russian, but not really, kind of a thing, making up a country.
So I am certainly no expert in the DC comic lore, but I know there are these fictional countries that exist in that Middle East or Western Russia zone that are conflict points that lead into more conflict points. If you look in the Young Justice show, I've recommended, if you haven't seen Young Justice, it's very good. There's four seasons of it, but a lot of that takes place in a fictional country, and that fictional country creates a lot of, you know, chaos, not only in that region, but in the world. And then there's metahumans that get involved in this region. This is kind of the same thing.
And it'll be interesting if they continue with this, because this is not from the comics. This is completely the show. The first appearance of this country, Pakalistan, is the show. It's really kind of interesting the way they present it. They present it as like this mesh of so many different things. It's like, yeah, they're kind of backwards, but they also have a big military. But their military is kind of backwards. But they got people in flight suits with kind of Iron Man style things. But they're not really that great. It's like, wait, pick one. I'm not sure what I'm watching here. I'm not really sure where you're going with this.
Yeah, like how big is this country? How populated is this country? The ruling class look like they're extremely loaded, living in old castles, but with very high-tech everything, except their day-to-day lives are just in, you know, regular rooms, and they swim in a lake. And you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of mix of the not technologically advanced, but more technologically advanced than what you'd imagine possible. It's a weird balance that I don't understand.
Yeah, it was odd. That's maybe the only thing about how they put this together that just it didn't quite hit right for me. But at the same time, it was a small enough piece of it. It's like, yeah, forgivable. It's not that important.
Yeah, when you watch the Young Justice series, the country that they're talking about, which maybe that one did exist. I have to figure out what country that name was. It was the same thing.
Yeah.
It was that blend of, you know, old leadership, the ruling class, and it looked like everything living in old world buildings, but presided over the ruling class, but they were at war with the neighboring country, but they had really high tech military stuff. I don't know. So very similar layout to what this is.
And then you got this mage, the Cersei, that they're trying to stop from killing the leader of the nation, because she, when captured, ends up saying she's going to destroy the world and all that. But she seems like she's this nice girl, and this nice, very sexually forward girl. As soon as Rick Flagg is involved.
How old is she?
I don't know. It's either mildly uncomfortable just because of how forward she is, or it's greatly uncomfortable because she's potentially not of the legal age and incredibly forward.
Yeah, and the thing about the setup in this, so like Rick Flagg Senior is a leader, Rick Flagg Junior is dead, right? And they address that, right?
Yeah.
But I think they even talked about how young he was when he had his son. So it's not like in this presentation, he's like 60 or 70,
no,
right? He's 50s probably.
Yeah. 50s.
So the character that we're seeing for the princess, queen princess, is that she's 18?
I'm hoping. I'm going with 18. I was getting the impression of like 16. And that's like,
yeah. So I thought about that too. I was like, what are we doing here? Or maybe it because it is animation and they don't really say or address it. Or maybe she's in her early 20s.
Yeah.
But that's still what we're looking at here in terms of who the ultimate threat is, apparently, according to Cersei, is this, you know,
little
young
girl,
person.
Right? So in the second, we start getting some of the real flashbacks. We get the history of the bride, which is just kind of the standard Bride of Frankenstein stuff. They didn't alter that all that much from the original kind of lore that everybody knew. They just kind of twisted it a little bit and gave a little more attitude. And, you know, you get to see that she's got, you know, Frankenstein is a stalker. And that brings up an interesting kind of a side to it, because at points you kind of want to like Frankenstein, but he's just such a ass.
Well, him chilling in the club, right? Well, that was hilarious to me.
That was so good. It's like, oh, he's so out of place. And it's just, and when he talks, he's almost intelligent for a second, and then he's not. And then he just remembers, like, oh, yeah, he's Frankenstein.
He's Frankenstein.
His brain is broken.
No, a few hundred years old.
he's never going to think quite right.
And you're right. He is the stalker, but he's immensely strong and powerful.
Right. And so
he only cares about stalking her.
Right.
So if he has to smash things and break things and kill things because of his pursuit of her, it doesn't mean anything to him.
No.
So it's an interesting dynamic.
Getting a little background on both of them is like, at this point, it's like, oh, that's, you know, that's some good background and I'm okay. And I'm fine. And that's the last point at which I'm fine when given the background of these characters. It feels like the goal going forward is, okay, you went into this looking for something light. Let's see if we can make you cry in half an hour.
Yes, there's a lot of sadness in these characters. Even in G.I. Robot, there's sadness.
Right. Cheers to the Tin Man. Episode 3, it's like, oh, he's not, well, he's kind of nice. He really wants to kill Nazis, but he really likes hanging out with his friends who also kill Nazis. And then he doesn't have friends. And finally, he gets somebody that gives him attention, and he's a Nazi, probably.
Yes.
Close enough, and he has to kill him. And everybody else that's anywhere nearby, he's just kind of like, oh, man.
Yeah, and the fact that they put him, you know, in prison.
Right.
Is, or they take him apart to analyze. It's funny. It's not, but it is. But it's just an right. Odd dynamic because it's a 1940s robot.
Yeah. So, and it's just so strange. And I love the fact that you get to see Sergeant Rock, which I don't remember them doing anything in the animated series with up until this point, because,
correct.
I mean, it's a World War II character. Why would you? And it's just like, that is, because that's one of the comics that I read regularly when I was younger, because I had opportunities to find some of these older comics that were before my time and look through them, and I thought it was really kind of neat. So getting to see that was awesome. It's like, okay, this that gave me a little bit of status. Like, I can deal with this. Everything is fine. And then you get to chasing squirrels in season 4. It's like, oh, come on, Gunn. Why are you going to take your silly character that you imply is maybe a child murderer in the film and then just completely turn it around?
Yeah, because you still don't get a lot of the what this character actually is, which is still funny.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what is the character? Okay, so
it's like the werewolf, kind of.
Yeah. It's a humanoid thing. And then you're right, though, they give you the perspective of you watch him dragging kids' bodies through the fire and then people shooting at him because, like, oh, look at this creature. And you're just like, okay, so now they're telling us the story of how he got into the prison and what happened.
Right.
And but then they don't, and then they are just like, oh, man, the whole time.
The whole time.
He's just a good guy.
He just wants to play fetch. That's all he really wants.
But the thing is, that particular the episode sets up an important little plot point in the last episode, though, too.
Right, his imprinting on the princess, that's really important. I love his finding the wolves and then playing fetch with the wolves and finding a little family of animals, and he has to choose whether to stay with them or to go finish his mission.
Mm-hmm. Because he's happy.
He is. He's super happy, and I'm not certain he understands what his mission is. He knows he's supposed to do something at the castle.
Yeah, it's just that weird. He's not intelligent as a humanoid, but he's not animal level intelligent either.
No,
he's cognizant, just somewhere in between. It's a weird dynamic. It's funny.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, that we can't make that any worse. And then we go into the Iron Pot and get the rest of Frankenstein's backstory. And just seeing, again, the things that you want to empathize with him, but at the same time, he's just such an awful, awful person.
Yeah, he's so distraught. And then the blind woman just kind of takes him under his wing,
And he loves her. And they have this thing, and it's like, oh, I wouldn't leave you alone. Of course I wouldn't leave you alone. Bleep that one out.
Yeah. Yes. So you're right. You're watching this whole backstory, and you're developing some sort of, oh, okay. Like, he does have some type of, like, conscience in him. He's got some feeling in him, and then it just goes away.
It's not that it's not there. It's just, it's like having, you understand you have this motorcycle. You know it's supposed to go forward, but I don't know how to drive it. Then when you try, it doesn't go well, and people die. That's 100% how that goes with him.
But you're okay.
Yeah. And they're, you know, as they're giving these back plots, they're making their way. They successfully, you know, defend the princess. You get more plot about, ooh, there may be something weird happening. And then Waller becomes Waller, and she's going to have the princess killed. And it's like, oh, no, and the bad things are coming. And then everything flips around again. Getting Prietel Skelet. That one was rough.
Well, I think during this whole series, you get the Dr. Phosphorus character as like a real I don't care. Right? He's got that very much so I don't care character. Right? When he's going through the mission and he's, you know, killing more people than almost anybody else.
Like, sure,
it's
whatever.
Effortless, nonchalant. His attitude towards his teammates are also the same way, but in not in it's here's the thing, not in a jerk way.
No,
it's just what do I care?
Nothing has any meaning anymore.
Correct. And nothing you can do is really going to do anything to me. That's just it. So it's we talk about Alan Tudyk and how good he is as a voice actor. And his deployment of this nonchalant character is very good.
And then when it comes down to showing, actually having those emotional moments when he reins it in, and it's just, you just see it again. He's got that other level of just skill. And it's just, it's like, yeah, I'm right there. I'm tied into it. I'm bought into the scene, even though it's it's a drawing. So I'm there, and it's just, it's again heart-wrenching and just awful. And this is the only episode we see Batman in very briefly.
Correct. And if you, there was a lot of overanalyzation of his like 1 second, you know, screen capture where he's in 5% of the screen in a shadowed variant and you're just looking at it. And apparently, James Gunn was very specific on how the animators were to present this character in this one little snippet.
It's right? supposed to look like Batman the Animated Series.
So, because this is technically the first introduction of Batman in this new universe. Because right. in the Superman movie, right, we're not going to see any Batman.
No.
And in the Batman movies that we're going to see, he's going to be a more seasoned Batman, and he's going to have Damian, as far as we know. So there's a lot of backstory available there to it. We just don't know what type of Batman is this really going to be, right? Obviously, no one in this series can seem to do anything with Dr. Phosphorus.
Right.
But he seemed to handle him probably with, you know, little to no concern.
Yeah. So. Well, you know, Batman's Batman.
Right.
He can handle anything. But, and then ending it with a very funny monster and seeing more of Nina's. The only person that, you know, all the other characters, while tragic, they killed people, a lot of people. And then Nina's just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Everything bad happens to her always. That was also a bit rough.
Yes, that we finally got to see how she is and why she is. She's always was very soft-spoken, very innocent, very, you know, she was part of this, but not, you know, kind of reluctantly.
Yeah.
She just never really participated.
Through the whole thing, she didn't kill anybody.
And then, it's like, this was her chance to fit in, right? Like, this was her chance to have some meaning or purpose after we found out that a lot of her meaning and purpose kind of disappeared,
right?
Like, this was her chance. Hey, these might be my friends. Let's go. Let's do this. And she just gets off.
Gutted. Yeah.
Yep.
And it feels like that's the whole thing that they're trying to do. It's like, okay, we're just going to test a little bit. We're going to lightly tap you in the gut in this episode. You okay? Okay. We're going to tap you a little harder in this episode. And just each one's like, hold still. Hold still. Don't move.
Well, and the other part of this too, and I mentioned it to you briefly in a text message, is that this is the Suicide Squad.
It is.
They're disposable, and they're meant. They're not meant to die, but they're, you know, okay, they're meant to be disposable characters.
Yeah, if they're gone, they're gone. Oh well. It's just...
So them, what we thought we had multiple deaths in characters, kind of, right?
Right.
And then, you know, we CGI robot with a brand new body.
Well, he's a robot. So
I
wasn't too worried about him. But yeah, unless they got to Nina really quick, I don't think she's coming back.
No, she, not like she had any healing factor or anything special like that. But the ending did kind of present you with a continuation of the stories for the Monster Squad as they just refilled their ranks, right? Because
right.
we saw King Shark in the room. We saw the mummy guy in the room.
Quite a few individuals that are in their new refurbished area.
Correct. So what that leads me to believe is that, one, there will be another season of this.
For sure.
But two, you know, there's the potential for some of these characters to show up in live action. We already know that that Frank Grillo is playing Rick Flagg Sr. in the Superman movie. So it's not like these characters are like they're just throwaway characters. They're part of the universe. It's just easier to tell their stories in this animated form than it would be in a live action. Like, trust me.
Yeah.
Having a Dr. Phosphorus character put fists through people's face would be an interesting view. But how is that going to go over in like a Batman movie, right? So
yeah.
I get it.
Yeah, and this is one of those things, like sometimes the animated stuff that you can do with DC or Marvel, it's like, hey, you can watch this, watch it with your kids. Whoa, no. Please have your kids be nowhere near this.
Yeah, I don't think this is not for children. It's not like it's hardcore adult filming, right? It's not, that's not it.
It's adult just themes and a lot of violence.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just, but done really well, and that's the theme, and that's what I'm going to take away, is if you want the violence that you came for, you got it. If you want a decent little plot, comic book like plot, you got it. If you wanted character development and growth, you got it. That's it. That's the trifecta, man. I mean, there's nothing else you could really ask for.
And I'm just curious. I really want the Superman movie to do well. Right. I want it to do well so they make more movies. I want it to do well because I want the stories to be told. I want it to do well because I want to see Mr. Terrific be cool.
Oh, yeah.
But I want, if this is what's going to lead into whatever action that is, that's also cool. That's fine. I'm rooting for the universe to succeed because we want good stories. We want a good Batman.
Yep.
Let's be honest. We want the bad guys to be cool. We want, have they told some stories? Like, have we really seen a good Darkseid story? No. A good Brainiac story? No. I mean, like, we want bad guys to be here. We want the universe to be vast with lots of good guys, bad guys with all different types of abilities. Just make it cool. And once again, if you are the fan of the DC stuff and you're not going to watch this because of some whatever reason, you're the problem with the DC universe not succeeding.
Yeah, definitely. So the only thing I'm hoping, I think this is a great start. Keep that character development and that character growth. If they can do this and do it in the films and do it in the other shows, they are going to smack around Marvel like it's nobody's business. I mean, I've always been more of a Marvel person than DC, but ultimately I will always side on the better stories. And that is the key, that right there, get that character stuff in there and you win, no matter what you're making. And so that's pretty much what that is in my eyes.
Absolutely.
So I cannot wait to see what they do with Superman and all the other stuff. In the meantime, next week we're going to be back and we've got a couple different options that we could go with. Right now on the list, it says that we're going to be trading movies.
Ooh, gives us
something to think about.
Gives us a week, I guess.
And then we'll finally maybe get to the Penguin. Maybe. We'll see. I got several things that are currently on this list. Like, yeah, we need to get to that at some point, maybe. After that, we've got Venom, Last Dance.
Gosh. Maybe if it shows up on, where would it be at? Stars?
It'd probably go on HBO first, I expect. Or no. Maybe not HBO. I don't know where that would show up first. It's a Sony thing.
I think that's Stars.
Maybe.
Ugh.
It may be a while then.
Well, okay. I will 100% have Stars this fall because there's a new Spartacus season coming out. So I'll have it.
Sparticles.
If we haven't reviewed Venom by this fall. Look forward to a review of the Venom movie in like October or November.
Yeah, quite possibly. But we'll have some more good stuff coming up. I got some things that I'm working on. It's just, this has been a really interesting end to 2024, beginning of 2025. I got to say, if you're living anything like I am right now, it's been, I don't want to say difficult, challenging. There's been some really weird things going on, but we'll come back to it soon. And until next time, just, watch them cartoons, have some fun.